Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our minds for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now on with the show. Welcome to Roguecast episode 198. Guys, we are two episodes away from our big 200th episode spectacular.
Let's celebrate now.
Yeah, okay. I was thinking for our 200th episode, let's do something special like...
A Will Smith style rap.
Interesting. I was thinking maybe we just record the episode the way we usually do, and but with clothes on. Yeah,
we all bring our pet.
I'm sorry, I don't know where you were going with this.
No, my point is we have nothing special for our 200th episode, and we're sorry about that in advance.
You know what we should do? I think we should take a little bit of time in the episode to talk about our favorite stuff and maybe a few cool customer memories. I've got some good customer memories.
Okay. It'll
be kind of fun.
All right, we'll
get a little store retrospective-y kind of thing, or any amusing anecdotes about the store. I think we can come up with some.
That's true. You'd probably tell people.
And there might even be some that we can actually say on the air.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking we could tell people about the, we've got our own version of Disney's Hidden Mickeys, thanks to our ex-staffer Amanda.
Oh, yeah, that would be a good story. Yes. I did not know that there was a thing called Hidden Mickeys.
Oh,
I'm extrapolating what you mean by it from context.
There are roofies throughout Disney World. Trying to avoid them.
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Mickey.
Yes. Yes, that is correct.
I think we also maybe, possibly, if not at 200 or close to it, we might have some new music for our show.
Oh, that's true.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do. We're closing in on that. That's
right. Yeah, yeah.
There may be a new theme song.
Yes.
Or... it may be like every other episode, and episode 202, there'll be new music.
Yes, yes.
But we'll see what happens.
We'll get around to it. Stop pressuring us, people.
Yeah. Even if the first time you hear it is in episode 202, we'll retroactively go back and put it on 200. And
yeah, so if you try and call us liars, you'll be correct.
Then we'll erase this episode. Anyway, so inventory sale continues.
Yes.
And this week it is up to 45% plus 2 to 12% off.
Meaning when you roll that dice, you're going to get 47 to 57% off.
Correct.
Damn. People be getting some awesome bargains.
There's some good stuff on that table still. So
yep.
There's also that huge oversized Little Nemo in Slumberland thing, which is a great book. I'm kind of surprised.
Was that the one that had all the artist tributes?
Yeah.
Like all the the greatest artists did tributes to?
I think nobody knows what they are, but it's a fantastic book. If you look at the back, you'll see this list of artists.
I wish more people knew Little Nemo.
You know, I've heard the good news about Little Nemo.
Nick's going to go door-to-door proselytizing.
Yes.
Sure. I'll just... take that book with me.
Good luck with that.
I know.
Could you have a pamphlet you could leave? No, but how about this 50-pound book?
I have this hardcover that's bigger than your child. Gaming with Rogues is Saturday. Star Realms tournament.
Right.
There's prizes. Dave and I want to pwn some noobs.
Yep. I'm not 100% sure I'm going to be there.
Of course not.
What time is it?
I don't know. It's like 7 o'clock.
Oh, then maybe.
But what we want to do is we want to play, and then you guys can probably just beat the pants off us.
I don't know. I'm going to study up.
You're pretty good.
I think what's the Empire called in there?
Interstellar Empire, isn't that what it's called?
I don't think that's quite right, but something like that. I think that that's going to be what I'm going to use to crush people.
That's your faction?
Yeah. Actually, that's not the best faction to pick as a singular faction.
No.
But they are one of the most annoying ones.
Yeah,
isn't that the one that causes, like, is it discards?
It's both. You draw more cards, and then you cause your opponent to discard cards.
Yeah. If they get a bunch of them, it can cripple a hand.
Oh, yeah.
Though.
And then there's the blobs that just do tons of damage.
Yeah, the blobs do tons of damage. The Federation does ridiculous amounts of healing, which is also very frustrating. And then who are we leaving out here?
The Machine Cult, which
the
is
Machine
good for
Cult,
destroying cards.
Vital for destroying cards, yes.
Yep. Anyway, Star Realms, one of our favorite games. Come on, play. It's a lot of fun. And then we got a little bit of news this week. It's not a ton. There was no Super Bowl or anything for the commercials from. But there was the weirdness of Old Spice creating new D&D classes.
Yes, all right. So I guess released on their Twitter feed, I think, was a link to an illustrated...
Four-page PDF
of their class, the Gentleman...
Or Gentle Lady.
Or Gentle Lady, with art and stuff, painted art, if I'm not mistaken.
It looks like a legit 3.5 D&D...
Yeah. Somewhat oddly for 3.5 instead of 5, but as was pointed out, I think that's kind of kept it all nice within the bounds of the open gaming license that 3.5 had. They didn't have to jump through as many hoops, I think.
So they're basically a bard on steroids. they get a modifier to their armor class when they wear a fancy suit.
which I'm sure that like a cleric wear or a paladin wearing heavy armor will be always.
They gain abilities as they level up, like turning into an intelligent dog, spontaneously summoning a horse, or healing allies with their pleasing scent.
Man.
Also, eventually you earn an MBA and have the opportunity to marry and can instantly level up his party by getting a new haircut. If a gentleman reaches level 20, he becomes a being of pure energy, can make anything explode at the cost of ascending to a higher plane of existence.
That's amazing. Fantastic. Yeah, my hat is off to Old Spice. You know, I did see somebody in another thread wondering, reasonably so, who's their target audience for this.
Right.
Because their kind of argument, their thought was like, they were, the initial audience for like Old Spice would be like baby boomers. And this would be like, she was guessing, aging Gen Xers, maybe?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. D&D's appeal, particularly right this very moment, is much broader than that.
Yep.
We are actually getting, like, almost, like, weekly we are getting teenagers who are coming back in to get into D&D. Coming back in,
A couple of...
They're buying that starter set so they can try D&D out for the first time. It's as if it's the 80s. It's weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
We've got a couple of groups that use the back tables to play their weekly D&D game.
Yep.
So, I mean...
Yeah, D&D's getting bigger again. And the audience is the younger people who think memes are funny.
Right, exactly. And so that is actually an appeal to neither necessarily to generation or baby boomers or Generation X, but to millennials and anybody who follows memes. So that there is even a foot in millennial generation here.
Yep.
I should point out, by the way, a lot of these kids that are buying like D&D, they're kind of in some ways they're like wanting the full experience. They want miniatures of their characters and stuff like that. They want to paint the miniatures. It's kind of I think maybe a cell phone generation is like, oh, this is interesting. Analog things, actual table things, interacting with humanity.
How quaint.
You know, even in the Legion of Superheroes future, back in Paul Levitz's 80s Legion of Superheroes, remember how they played D&D?
I do.
I'm sure I believe they had like a holographic table, kind of like the chess table on the Millennium Falcon, but they were still playing head-to-head D&D.
It's true.
They didn't even Skype in. If Timberwolf was going to play, he was going to be there.
That's right. Timberwolf don't Skype. All right, so also on the kind of weirder side of the news, and there's a lot of weirder side of the news here this week.
Yeah.
There's new Firefly novels coming.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is big news. Like, this made its way around.
Canonical.
They are canonical. They're from the Titan Books, the guys who do the comics.
Yeah. Okay. UK publisher?
Yeah, yeah.
Whoa, they can't know about our Western space stories.
Apparently they do. They'll probably just have a British accent. but there's three novels coming out.
Cool, blimey, Jane!
Mal is now known as Sir Mal.
And,
Milady Kaylee.
the first one's called Big Damn Hero. It's written by Nancy Holder. It's Mal being kidnapped by a bunch of embittered veteran browncoats.
Mal and a version of a kidnapping situation sounds pretty good because his torture situation was weirdly hilarious.
The second one is about Jane getting a call for help from his ex, Temperance McLeod.
Do we know who that is? Is that from...
Temperance is a name I remember.
Okay.
And the third is Firefly Generations, which is about River Tam as they contemplate the staggering salvage potential of one of the lost Ark ships that brought humanity to the larger galaxy. Huh? So the thing about all this that sounds...
Are they all post-Serenity, real quick?
I think so.
I was kind of under the impression it's all new stories of the post-Serenity era.
So here's the thing. As I read all these sound very disposable. Like, none of this sounds like stories that are really going to add anything notable.
Right, to like the marriage of Mal and Inara or something like that.
Like, I feel like it feels like going backwards to go back to episodic now after the Serenity movie.
Well, I could see that they might want to let's see if people are into these.
Yeah.
And then we'll start, you know, like how like the Star Wars novels broadly are episodic, but every once in a while they'll kill a Chewie.
Well, to tie it into one of the things I'm going to talk about in the comics today, the Star Wars novels, they start off with things like Splendor of the Mind's Eye and the Lando and the Han Solo ones, which are all kind of disposable.
Sure, sure.
And then they sort of brought everything back when they did the Thrawn trilogy.
Right.
So I kind of want Serenity to have its Thrawn trilogy.
Right. Yeah, I guess I can see how they might not want to open with that, that there may be a testing the waters period to just see, do people want Firefly novels?
And three novels is not nothing.
No,
that means it's three novels until Randy gets his It Counts storyline.
Right, exactly.
Randy doesn't want it unless it's like a Marvel crossover where somebody dies and somebody gets married.
Yes. And also Spider-Man is in it.
And Spider-Man is in it and he gets a black costume.
Yeah. That's going to happen in Serenity 2.
Yes.
Serenity 2, Venom 2.
Yeah. It's going to be very comic-like. Certain characters will come back from the dead.
Well, if they tie Venom into Serenity...
I actually don't even want to say who those characters would be because I don't want to spoil it, and the off chance somebody listening has not seen Serenity.
But somehow if Venom ties into Serenity, the movie will be infinitely better.
So let me ask you a question. We didn't talk about the Venom teaser, did we?
No, we did not.
So there was a Venom teaser.
When we say Venom teaser, like...
It's terrible.
Like, you might not know that's what it is.
No.
Like, if you didn't know that's what it is.
You might get... if you knew Tom Hardy was playing Venom...
Yeah.
That might be a small... You can make that leap.
This was, like, a sort of generic and disposable teaser in which Tom Hardy kind of narrates and... you're getting, like, an internal monologue where he's talking about... What is it? I'm trying to remember.
It's completely rage forgettable and
anger and being different personalities.
Right. And I was like, okay, that's how it's going to start out. And then at the very end, it's going to show him creeping around in the full Venom costume. And, like, he's going to look scary as hell just for a few quick scenes.
Yeah.
But no, it was just him saying those things.
And then
it ended. And suddenly it just ended.
Yeah.
And then there was, like, a logo that forms that looks like Venom's face, sort of.
It's terrible. I mean, first of all, I don't know why they're making this movie. And
it came out right on the heels of the Deadpool teaser, which was everything fans wanted from a Deadpool teaser.
Yeah.
It had Cable being a badass, and it had Deadpool doing a bunch of goofy stuff and making fun of Cable being a badass. Basically, it did all the stuff it needed to do. And this did none of the stuff it needed to do, not even one.
It feels like Sony doesn't really know what to do with their properties. Oh, there's also another story I was going to mention. Speaking of Sony, they're going to be doing movies based on Wizard World.
Oh, right. I heard this mentioned, but I was not clear on what it was.
Wait,
movies or comics?
Movies. They made some kind of deal with Wizard World, and I don't know if they're going to do comics that they didn't turn into movies, but there is nothing about Wizard World being more involved with comics that is a good thing. There is no version of it that's a good thing. Wizard is a vestigial origin of the 90s and needs to go away completely.
Yes.
It is.
What's the overall take on their shows? Are they okay?
They've turned to sort of celeb shows. I mean, you can have fun with them because there's not a lot of other shows in town.
Right.
But I think that. In general, I think the creators have been sort of down on them because they do encourage people to spend all their money on autographs instead of actually getting, like, stuff from the comic book creators.
Wizard was always, kind of very broadly speaking, what you would call, we should probably bleep this, starfuckers.
Leave it in.
But the magazine was that way. They were always doing their celebrity casting calls and all that stuff.
Those were fun.
They were fun. They did, maybe in their weird way, might have paved the way for where things are now, where it's like people that they would not have dared to like use in those days, they'll get it now.
I bought a lot of Wizard. I had so many damn issues.
They did cast a lot of wrestlers, though, and a whole lot of like, well, this person is like to play the White Queen. We need somebody who's got a great body, female wrestler.
Yep.
You know, they'd be like, oh, no.
Well,
actually, I think they cast Rebecca De Mornay.
That's not crazy.
And that
one is. There was a big Wizard World, like, Garrett Sheamus was a huge, he's a guy who runs Wizard, was a huge wrestling fan, like, when they started doing wrestling stuff, crossing over to Wizard, they were really trying to create that comics wrestling, to really build that comics wrestling.
The same way that the 80s so brilliantly synergized wrestling and rock.
Yeah, yeah.
For a single album that was stinky, whatever, yeah. What are we talking about? Right,
talking about
so what are they actually doing?
We don't really know. There's some kind of production deal between Sony, who... Sony is like the bizarro Marvel. Like, we talk about how DC is... Okay, I talk about how DC has screwed up everything in their movies, but DC looks like the Marvel Cinematic Universe compared to what Sony has been putting together. Like, the only exception was when they did the Spider-Man Homecoming, which they did with the Marvel production company, basically.
Right.
So the notion that
Sony... That was probably, like, the equivalent of the nerd doing the bully's homework for
him. Oh, my God, yes. That's what it was. Yeah, here's Spider-Man. I'm gonna go out here and make a deal with Wizard World. You turned in my homework.
Yeah.
But
it was the Venom trailer was awful.
The Venom trailer was awful. But
I was just gonna say like Tom Hardy could be very good in the role.
He could.
But that trailer, like, I think would not particularly please Tom Hardy fans because it was kind of just vague and meandering. It's for sure not going to please Venom fans, which would say...
There was no Venom or no eating brains or...
Yeah. There wasn't even a... And also, it always seemed like an ill-conceived idea because they kind of... They, like, can't use Spider-Man in it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they somehow have to do a Venom movie that's where he's going to just be, like, I don't know, some serial killer in black or serial killer a good guy, like Dexter, but in black...
It's not that there's not a version of this that works. It's that this does not look like that version.
Yeah.
Well, it also looks like they're embarrassed by Venom.
Right. And it's going to be like a small movie when it needs to have some of that superhero energy or something like that.
It needs to have energy. I don't know. It could have anything other than a superhero energy. It just needs energy.
Yes.
It has none.
But there was also a new trailer for Deadpool 2.
That had all kinds of energy.
And Dave, I know, as our preeminent Deadpool fan, you should talk about it.
Yeah, well, I made a point to... I can't remember. Did I post that one on Facebook?
I don't think you did. You posted the picture.
I posted the later picture that was a spoof of a Norman Rockwell picture of an artist painting subject where Deadpool is painting... Cable sitting there looking all badass, but the picture he's painting is of who's the actor?
Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin in his first role as the headband wearing meathead in Goonies.
Yep.
Hilariously, the older brother. Yeah.
That kind of pop culture riff is exactly what Deadpool.
Perfect.
I mean, the previous poster was him doing a flash dance riff.
Right. Yeah. Is it going to be all 80s stuff like
it
that?
Could be.
That might be their theme, sort of. Anyway, what is the trailer, I guess, starts with...
It's called the Cable trailer.
Right, Cable is kind of like narrating and say, if I'm not mistaken, and saying sort of, you know, badass stuff about, you know, I'm a man out of time, and I think it was stuff like that. And then...
It, like, cuts to him, like, with a green-screened arm, and Deadpool stops the tape. Like,
we couldn't finish the effects? And then
He's making fun of, unfinished effects in it.
Yes.
Then he does a Toy Story riff, which is pretty funny.
And begins playing with action figures of Deadpool and Cable, like, fighting each other in front of, like, a cheesy cityscape.
Fighting, yeah.
Yeah.
And then they head back to the trailer, and we get some flashes of Cable looking cool, Domino looking badass.
Yeah.
It looks like fun.
Yeah. It was like, by the way, I did not notice the red band thing before this, but they like dropped the F-bomb and other stuff in there. So maybe they're just like, Deadpool trailers get to be an exception. It was the only trailer I saw was the one with swearing in it. Yeah. Like, I kind of looked around just to see if there was like another version. I didn't immediately spot it.
There's also a small snippet of the trailer where we see Deadpool on a team, which is theorizing that it's X-Force. There is a guy that has a Shatterstar like outfit, and why am I blanking on the actor's name from? I don't know. There was a few people like the guy playing possibly GW Bridge.
Terry Crews.
Thank you. Blanked on his name, but yeah, no, it looks interesting.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I won't see it. Don't hold it against me. It's just not my thing. But I'll, you know, watch a few clips here and there, I'm sure, and see a thousand memes about it on Facebook, and I'll see My Little Ponies as Deadpool, and Deadpool making fun of other trailers, and a new Honest trailer. They should do an Honest trailer before the movie even comes out, probably. And as I recall, Honest trailers actually got... Ryan Reynolds to join with them to make fun of it.
At this point, I don't even... Do we know of the villain?
It's not the Cable is the villain.
I don't think Cable's the villain.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't think
I think it's going to be... I presume it was going to be more of a... They have a team up. Cable's the straight man. And
you know, as
I'm
much
sure he will shoot Deadpool at some point.
Me too.
As much as I kind of laugh at Strife, seeing Strife on the big screen would actually be kind of awesome.
If this would be a Strife and a Shatterstar and... I feel like Rob Liefeld wins.
Let me tell you what. If Strife is in it, I might go see it.
You just want to see his big chandelier head on the
screen? Because of the sheer... Like, at that point, I know we've reached full comics.
Yeah, yeah.
And chandelier head.
I don't think you can turn away from chandelier head.
No hero can beat that.
All right, so we talked about something good, so let's talk again about bad decisions. DC's Lobo movie, they're circling Michael Bay as their director.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? Why?
What was the last movie Michael Bay did? Was it Transformers property?
Because yeah. He makes movies that make money.
He makes a ton of money.
And he makes movies that are meathead movies.
Yeah.
And Lobo is a meathead property.
But is, I mean, it's disappointing because don't you think Lobo could be DC's Deadpool? They're R-rated, yeah. Fun, smart. Movie
I mean, that's probably
right.
Someone...
Smart, but he's dumb, but the movie's smart.
The movie's smart.
Right.
That's kind of what Deadpool was.
I'm sure someone thought that that was actually the case, but they decided to go with Michael Bay, and yeah. You're not going to get that.
No, yeah. That's not
I'm trying to think if there's a director who comes to mind. Weirdly, the only one who comes to mind is one who, it's not quite his thing, but somebody like Paul Verhoeven. Yeah. Paul Verhoeven does extreme violence, satire... a lot of the types of things that fit Lobo,
but
too.
He would be like, let's cast Casper Van Dien as Lobo.
Actually, Casper Van Dien was very deliberately and smartly cast to play a kind of a pretty boy in a war that was going to, like, scar up everybody. Like, but that's the kind of, like, director that I might think of is somebody who might have been able to do something with it.
Yeah.
Also,
not that guy.
Somebody, I do think my favorite version of Lobo, somebody, one of our friends said this on Facebook, is probably the Superman animated series one.
Yeah.
Voiced by Brad Garrett.
Who's that? Who is that?
He's from,
Everybody Loves Raymond. He's a stand-up comedian.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, he was hilarious in there. They did, Paul Dini, I think, wrote the two-part episode. He's just funny in it.
Yep.
He does get to do all the things you like to see Lobo do, kick ass, be a smart ass, be the... you know, the Cable to Superman, or the Deadpool to Superman's Cable in that very story.
That is, I have never heard Superman compared to Cable in any way. That is a weird...
But yeah, Superman is the straight man,
right.
And
yep.
It works.
Yep. He was also really good in the Justice League episode that he showed up in.
I can't...
Where
I don't
that
know if I
Superman
saw that
had
one.
Died. Well, died in quotation marks. He was like in a
was
future
like,
Earth.
Who fragged him?
No, he was like wanting to join the Justice League. he was going to become their heavy hitter.
That sounds like a good story. That's a good premise right there. Holy fragger-roly. He did say that at one point.
He did say that, yeah. Finally, our final news story of the week is that the Matrix is real and we're all living in it. And it's trying to do increasingly weird to see if we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Because Michael Fassbender has been enlisted to star in a Kung Fury sequel for the big screen.
Did everybody see Kung Fury?
I did not.
Yes.
I did not.
All right. Well, I don't know. For those who might not have, this was a like Kickstarter or some kind of crowdfunded movie that was like all the 80s kind of buddy cop, martial arts, ninja fighting cliches crammed into one insane...
There was time traveling, there were dinosaurs, there was Vikings, I think Hitler was involved.
Yeah, Hitler was like the bad guy, they used like a Nintendo, like Virtual Boy.
Was Nicolas Cage involved?
Or no, like the Power Glove to hack time,
yeah,
I believe, and send Kung Fury, a cop on the edge, who knows Kung Fu and stuff like that, back in time to kill Hitler.
Yeah.
I believe, as he put it... in the trailer, he's like, Hitler's the worst villain of all time. I'm going to go back and kill him.
Yep.
Or something like that.
Yeah, as I recall, Kung Fury was a movie where I was like, that was cute. And some people, it's almost a religion.
Right. My favorite part about it, as I said, mentioned off mic, is the David Hasselhoff song and video that came out of it, which was a great kind of homage to the kind of Eye of the Tiger style, I'm going to say, like, power rock... inspirational tracks. The you know, you're gonna like work out in the gym in the 80s. This is what you're gonna listen to.
Yep.
I think it's called True Survivor. If you haven't heard it, look it up. It is on Spotify and all that stuff.
Yep. But
it's hilarious. Also, the video is a hilarious David Hasselhoff kind of thing.
But they wrote a check big enough that Michael Fassbender was like, sure.
Apparently, Fassbender's going to be Kung Fury in the sequel.
Well, his last movie did
not. The kind of slightly schlocky effects were sort of part of the charm, so a big budget version, even if it's deliberately schlocky, seems ill-conceived.
It doesn't seem like the best idea to me, no. But I'm weirded out by
But maybe he will ham it up so hard that it's going to be amazing. I don't know.
Maybe so. All right, we'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, February 14th. It's Valentine's Day. Or it will be when people are listening to this.
So
it's
assume true. That all of our choices, let's try and look for a Valentine's theme in them, which does not exist.
Challenge accepted. All right. So my pick for the week is Star Wars Thrawn, number one. Written by Jody Hauser, who's written Faith and Mother Panic.
Yep.
Artist is Luke Ross, who is pretty has always been great.
May I just say that on that cover, Admiral Thrawn, who's best known as like this deadly tactician for the Empire in the post-Jedi era, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is looking very, very kind of sexy.
Fabio romance novel cover.
Yeah, yeah. So there's your Valentine's tie-in on that one.
The other tie-in. Star Wars fans love Thrawn.
That's true.
And you know what else? I love Thrawn. I think he's a really good bad guy. He's really interesting because the Empire is famously like xenophobic. They don't have aliens. So to have this like alien Grand Admiral was a really interesting choice. And
is that addressed, by the way? That like
it is, and that's okay. why like I really like this. It starts with Thrawn as sort of this alien freedom fighter, this legendary warrior on his planet. He's captured by the Empire and sort of slowly works his way up, and it's about him becoming... It's him and his, like, translator who becomes, like, his aide, and they go to, like, Imperial boot camp. And it's, his audience with the Emperor, and during which he sort of has...
What's the era?
It is probably post-Clone Wars, pre-Star Wars.
Okay.
So, like, because the troopers look like the clone troopers, and... Yeah, it is sort of the inner workings of the Empire and what it was like to be an alien inside this this machine. And at the same time, it's showing Thrawn to be this clever tactician, a guy who's sort of three steps ahead at all times and how he does that. And that's a hard thing to write, and I think Hauser does a really good job writing it.
He's the Batman of Imperial villains.
But I think she did a great job of sort of... she doesn't do the humanizing thing.
It is
like,
based on a book, right? I believe it's adapted from another Timothy Zahn novel. It should say on the page.
It does not say that.
Okay, somewhere I saw that.
Oh, based on all by Timothy Zahn. You're right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. But yeah, that makes sense then, because
Zahn is the Thrawn.
Is the guy who created Thrawn.
Yes.
So it makes sense that he would have a finger on the pulse of what the character's like. But yeah, I really enjoyed this. It was sort of a backstory I didn't know I wanted, but I thought was really done, really well done. And Luke Ross is just fantastic art, so...
Yeah, oh, that's Luke Ross. That's a good call for it. Yeah, I can imagine seeing some of that stuff. I'm sure his prose novel is cool and everything. People have always liked his Star Wars books, but seeing it visualized with by a strong artist in that era is pretty cool.
And you get sexy Fabio style Thrawn.
That's right. He's got we're used to him with the kind of like it's not a crew cut, but it's a short Star Trek looking military cut
in his little white uniform. Yeah.
And here he's all like letting his hair fly. He's a rebel.
He's got pouches on his legs. On his pants.
You're right. I haven't seen those kind of pouches on his legs since Luke had pouches on his legs.
Long flowing hair and
and if the wind blew it just right.
Sinewy blue arms.
Say goodbye to your heart.
Dave, what's your Valentine's pick?
All right, my Valentine's pick is kind of an oddball one. It's DC's spinning out all these books out of Dark Knight's Metal, which I'm not reading, and which they don't actually seem to have a huge link to, but this one actually sort of does.
Yeah, it's probably the most out of any of them so far.
Because a big event that happened in there that I would need Nick to explain to me is kind of the catalyst for it, but we'll get to that in a minute. As it starts out, you've got a...
You didn't read the book, by the way.
The book is Sideways, number one. This is... what are the other launches? Nick, you picked a few weeks ago.
Silencer,
and then there was at least
Damage.
One other one? Damage, yeah. Who was like their kind of like a government hero who we think might have some tie to Hour Man or something like that because he only has his powers for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy is a teenage superhero, looks suspiciously like Spider-Man, maybe litigiously like Spider-Man on the cover. But prove and is in fact even like a teen superhero, like Spider-Man was back in the day.
He doesn't fire webs.
But he doesn't fire webs, and there's some personality to the comic which I liked. It's also it's a vibe I haven't seen in a while, which is maybe since who have they had that have been younger superheroes? Blue Beetle,
yeah
Blue Beetle's probably the big one.
Anybody else? That was like 10 years ago.
It's been a little while.
So anyway. When the story begins, he teleports in on his girlfriend, who clearly knows, like, the morning before school. She knows the deal. He scares her, though, accidentally. But you see they've got a good kind of casual, fun relationship. His powers are, in fact, we'll find out, related to is these little... He can almost, like, kind of, like, slice a little portal in the universe and jump into it and appear where he wants to, with a few caveats. It doesn't work quite perfectly.
It reminds me a little bit of the movie Jumper. I don't know if you ever saw that.
I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing?
Yeah. He basically has the ability to jump anywhere he wants to.
Okay.
But, you know.
He's also got some super strength, like you would hope to have. His girlfriend asks if he's as strong as Superman, and he's like, not as strong, but I do all right. And he's saying that, like, very casually, like, hoisting over his head her dresser or whatever. And so yeah, he's got some super strength to go with it. what happens is we see in flashback that he got his powers through... They were living in Gotham. Are they still in Gotham? Is this actually where it's set?
No, they moved out of Gotham.
Okay, they moved out probably because of this very incident.
Exactly.
Which was in the middle of Dark Knight's Metal, or early on in that.
Yes.
This giant mountain, which we would come to know as...
Challenger's Mountain.
Which ties
to Challenger's the Unknown.
Challenger's the Unknown, yeah.
Yep.
Appears, or is like teleported in the center of Gotham and causes, what, mass destruction?
Yep. Craziness.
Right, there's like clouds and energy and stuff all over around it, and like he falls through like a portal or something like that, and wakes up elsewhere in town with his powers. And they haven't given all the details yet, but basically it was enough to panic his parents into leaving Gotham and give him his powers. His girlfriend made a costume. We don't know all the details behind what he's planning to do with it. Well, actually, I guess in some way we know at least the basics of it. Because by the end of the issue, when he's trying it out, he's clearly planning to build a live streaming show around it.
Yeah.
Wants
to go a little booster with it.
Right. That's exactly... I think that's a good example. Is like a little bit of a teenage Booster Gold vibe to it. He's maybe not as like kind of overtly crass as, I think, Booster. But... I think they must have tried to said, what would you do if you were a teenager that got superpowers? And one of the obvious things would be like, oh, I want to be a YouTube celebrity.
I mean, the writer of this is Dan DiDio, and I think he actually does a pretty good job of giving the main character some personality.
DiDio, given that he's as kind of, what, editor-in-chief? Is that what he is? Or
I think so. I forget his actual
DiDio
title.
Editor-in-chief?
I don't remember.
And it's also that they are credited with... Oh, that's interesting. Kenneth Rocafort, who's the artist on it, and Dan DiDio credited as storytellers, but the dialogue is credited to Dan DiDio and Justin Jordan.
Okay.
Justin Jordan, perhaps helping out with the youth dialogue of
maybe
today.
Maybe so. But like I was saying, I mean, the main character is interesting. He's kind of an introvert, but also with some extrovert tendencies by doing the whole show thing.
Yeah.
Maybe
an ambivert, as they call him.
There we go.
Which is generally like what we think of as an extroverted introvert.
Yeah.
You know, you want your time alone, but you might have a little showmanship and stuff.
Especially if you have powers and the ability to teleport wherever you want.
Now, by the end of the issue, you see, you find out more about the rifts he create and why they don't always work. And he also seems to have attracted some notable attention. Not by somebody I know, but somebody who has a pretty cool design and looks scary. And
yeah.
I would be curious to see what this person's deal is. The vibe... for all that this guy looks like Spider-Man, the vibe is a little bit Spider-Man. Like, if you're kind of interested in maybe seeing a new teen superhero, you're not gonna... This does not reinvent the wheel. This is a, like, DC saying, like, we can do a wheel. We'll use this wheel that you've already worked on, Marvel, and give it some different kinds of powers. But I found it more approachable than the either... You know, Damage didn't particularly resonate with me. Who was, like, basically a government agent. Silencer didn't quite grab me as an assassin type. But there's something about the kind of the lighter-hearted teen superheroes that's more fun here. Even Kenneth Rocafort's art, which I'm not a huge fan of, seems to suit the subject matter,
mm-hmm.
You know? He's got kind of a energetic, detailed style. that has a kind of a good grasp for the details of a little bit of high school life. And I keep saying kid. I guess I didn't say what he is. It's pretty clearly high school. But yeah, he's kind of plugged in on his like on his phone all the time. Generally, his phone buds in his ears, and not exactly beloved at school. Not an outcast in the way that Peter Parker was, but kind of an outcast. Anyway, I just kind of thought it was a fun, solid little issue.
Dave, what's your Valentine's Day tie-in?
The Valentine's Day tie-in is, I think he seems like, despite the fact that he scared his girlfriend, he seems like they have a good, healthy relationship, and I bet he'd get her something nice for Valentine's Day.
Okay, good.
She has, I'm going to say a, like, either like an anime girl or something like that, because she is wearing, like, one of those, like, onesies to school that is like, I don't know, it'd be like Stitch from Lilo and Stitch or something like that.
Yeah, it's like a monster one.
It's a monster-y thing.
But to be clear, Stitch is not an anime. Lilo and Stitch is not an anime.
Ballpark. but wearing onesies of it isn't more of an anime thing.
Okay, fair enough.
You see what I mean? It's like something.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yes, I believe that the lead character, Derek, loves his girlfriend and is probably getting her a Valentine's Day present right now. That's and he's gonna teleport in and scare her, and then it's gonna be something nice, and she's gonna be like, "Aw, you."
Okay, Nick?
I mean, I don't know how I'm gonna pull a Valentine's Day connection out of Captain America number 698.
Cap loves America.
I mean, that's true. He would get America the biggest Valentine's Day card.
Let's hear what the story is. Maybe the story will suggest.
You know what Cap's biggest Valentine is to America? The Valentine of Freedom. You get a big candy heart full of freedom. That's what you get from that.
So,
how would you like some liberty?
This is a jumping on point. It's the first part of the out of time story arc. Again, Cap, as always, is a man out of time. He is again out of time because he has been refrozen and, brought back into the future.
How did he get refrozen?
At the end
Craven
of...
pushed him off a cliff. Sort of.
Are you joking?
Nope.
In that last one, yeah, Craven pushed him off a cliff.
I remember that, sort of.
Basically, another organization froze him and...
Do we think this is real and not some Matrix thing?
No, it seems to have happened.
This is clearly
a time traveling back, but...
Sure, sure. Okay.
But, yeah, Cap...
And what sort of future does he awaken into, Nick?
It's great. Everything's wonderful.
yeah. Sure, if you want to...
There's one thing I know about the future, it's usually great.
If you want to wake up into a dystopian totalitarian regime where most of the world has been
it
destroyed...
It came true! We're living it!
Yep. I kind of like the out of the future kind of dystopian stories anyways, and...
Yeah, I like those. Somewhat recently, like in the last 5 years, Rick Remender did his particularly dark thing where he was in, like, Dimension Z.
Yep.
An old-school Kirby concept, but he turned into this, like... survivalist wasteland of bleakness as only Rick Remender can.
Yep.
But it has had beautiful art, and I actually did find it a compelling story. It was a little hard to wrap my head around Cap being in that situation.
And there's a bleak edge to this one as well. But Mark Waid, of course, brings sort of the hopefulness with Captain America being there and being the tried and true hero that he is.
Is hopefully. There any particular hook to it, like Zemo rules the world?
No, we don't. There is a kind of...
There's a guy named King Baby.
Yeah. Yes.
What?
The guy named King Baby. There was a nuclear exchange, and the wealthy elites have taken America for themselves, and the rest of the world live. Everybody else lives in sort of poverty.
His real name is Maximilian Babington.
Maximilian Babington. Which, by the way, I'm still guessing he's going to be some Marvel character.
I'd imagine that Mark Waid will come up with something. Yeah. He'll tie it in.
But Cap is sort of awakened by these freedom fighters, and has to sort of learn to rise up again in a world where. The values that he once stood for have been taken, and
like the 1% are sort of rule, but rule sort of in fear of this King Baby,
okay.
Who controls all things with his sort of Nazi soldiers and giant robots.
I wouldn't know how that we would relate to anything like that in the present.
Nope.
A King Baby
yep.
who rules and has Nazi people working for him,
yep.
and nobody knows what to do about him.
Look, Wade's a little bit on the nose here.
Okay.
It's a little bit on the nose. But... Sammy gets to draw some cool action, does some cool robots,
Yeah, just you're flipping through it, it's very, it's like, the visuals on it, like, as always, like, Mark Waid seems to know what to let his artists do, and so building a future with strong visuals and stuff it looks like he gave Sam Neill the room to do that.
We also get, Cap gets a group of soldiers to work with him.
Yeah.
We know some of these people from various story arcs in the past, so we're definitely going to get
mainly
some characters.
Cap stuff or Marvel characters?
No, there's an X-Men character in here I recognize.
Deep cut.
So, we'll see how that
when
ties in.
I say deep cut, maybe it's Rogue.
No. It's actually a character that Peter David used in his X-Factor run, so... It's interesting. So, I don't know. Good story. Great start off to this. So, I'm curious to see where it goes.
Yep. Your backup pick?
My backup.
Oh, well, no. We don't know the Valentine's pick. What's your backup picks, Valentine's tie-in?
My backup pick is...
Good luck!
My backup picks is Dark Knight's Rising, The Wild Hunt.
You know what Morrison loves?
Drugs.
Mushrooms.
He just loves love, man. What are you talking about?
That is exactly right, too.
But no, this is actually Scott Snyder and Grant Morrison working alongside with James Tynion and Joshua Williamson.
Those particular that Morrison and Snyder have teamed up?
Yeah, I believe so. But I mean, I kind of always felt that metal is very Morrisonian.
Sure. There is no doubt that they were riffing a little bit on his kind of his gung-ho style of
I feel like else. Snyder read Multiversity and was like, I can do something with that. And in fact, Multiversity rears its head in here. There's the ship that was used in Multiversity is what the heroes are on at this moment. And all this book is actually focusing on several different instances, but maybe mainly a team consisting of Flash, Cyborg, and Raven, which...
Flash, Cyborg, like Barry Allen Flash?
Yeah.
Cyborg and Raven. So you get two Teen Titans and a Leaguer?
Yep. And it's actually facing off against all of sort of the horsemen of Barbatos, the man who laughs. And,
oh, the evil bats?
Yep. Red Death and...
I do, by the way, I actually kind of like oddball teams like that, those three that you mentioned.
Well,
that's kind of cool.
It gives kind of an interesting spotlight to Raven, which she gets to be kind of a badass here. Showing up against some of these big players that we've seen go toe-to-toe with, like Superman, which I thought was a very cool idea.
Yeah.
And honestly, the whole story is very Morrisonian. It has all to do with song and what music can do, and that's something we've seen play in the Final Crisis. And one of the also big players in here is Detective Chimp, which we get sort of his life story as sort of
finally.
Prologue and epilogue to the book itself.
This one will probably like go up in value just because of the Detective Chimp stuff.
And there is a surprise Earth we knew nothing about comes into play here. A 53rd Earth.
Earth Chimp. Wait, Scott Snyder's writing it. Does the chimp die?
Does Batman shoot the chimp?
He does not shoot a chimp.
Does
no,
somebody...
Here, I will say this. No animals have died in this, so you guys
give it
can't.
Time. Oh, actually, is it a one-shot or...?
Well, it is a one-shot tying into the larger story.
Okay.
But yes, we will...
What's the Valentine's Day collection connection then, Nick? Where does love rear its head in this? I mean, I think we're right. Grant Morrison does love his substances.
Yes. But I also think it shows a certain love that they didn't kill the chimp.
But it's also a love of the DC universe and the hopefulness it represents.
There you go. Yes, that is my backup pick.
And also psychedelic mushrooms.
My backup pick... this one's going to be tough. Oh, right, no. Because this has Jesus in it, and Jesus has eternal love for all.
That's true.
Perhaps even Judas. This is Judas issue 3 of 4.
He would give Judas a Valentine's Day card.
Well, that in its way, that is the full that is at the heart of the story. Is like what seems to have happened in this is Judas has been talking to Lucifer for the last several issues as his story has been recapped, and we've seen him in hell. And Lucifer's kind of done his spin on this is how God betrayed you and everyone else, and you get used as a pawn. And but it seems like what's happened is that when Jesus died in his mortality and his taking on people's sins and cleansing them of them, he must also experience what it's like to, I guess, die as a sinner, too. So unbeknownst to him, or like, he clearly did not expect this, but upon his death, even though I don't think it's meant to last, he does end up in hell, sort of at Lucifer's mercy.
It's an interesting spin on that.
It is interesting. Like, I hadn't quite seen anything like this before, and it's in keeping with the cleverness that the book has had before, which is a sympathetic look at Judas, but it's not in such a clumsy way as to, even though the Lucifer would have you have it this way, as to sort of vilify the powers of heaven and make it all, you know, make it out that they are, I guess, as like Garth Ennis might, sort of a creepy bureaucracy, or, you know, like an inbred bureaucracy. But here, although Jesus does seem like kind of compromised in his way, he and Judas kind of have an interesting conversation in it. Judas comes to some interesting conclusions based on it and sort of the events that follow and what Lucifer wants out of it. So I don't quite know where the story is ultimately going, but it was certainly not one as indicated at the very end. It's not the direction I expected it to go, and it's pretty interesting. As someone who is not a particularly religious person, even remotely, I'm still always fascinated by religion, and this has been an interesting an interesting spin on the single most central story to Christianity and the great villain of Christianity. It's already been kind of let off the hook occasionally in stories, depending on what you're coming from. But like, was it Jesus Christ Superstar had the sympathetic Judas? I believe the Gospel of Judas, which is one of those Apocrypha things, had it. Anyway, I'm continuing to really like it. I like the art in it.
You picked all three issues.
Yeah, it's been interesting throughout. So, I'm going with Jesus' love for all mankind.
I'm going with Jesus would give Judas a Valentine, saying, do you like me? Are you going to betray me? Yes, please check this box. All right, so my pick is Marvel 2-in-1 number 3, starring The Thing and the Human Torch. And this is all about the love of family.
Yes.
And also, it is a Valentine to fans of Hercules, because this sees...
I think we need to do this for all holidays. Whenever a holiday is coming up, we have to find out how each book relates to the holiday.
Interesting.
I think President's Day is coming up next week, so next week we'll try and do the President's Day theme.
I'm completely down for it.
All right, so Thing and Human Torch are trying to fix Human Torch's fading powers and then use this extra-dimensional gizmo to go dimension hopping. Thing knows that Reed basically said, you know, we're gone, and here's this dimensional thing. But he's got Torch believing that they need to go find Reed and Sue.
Uh-huh.
What's interesting is that we, the reader, know that Reed and Sue are, in fact, alive out there in the multiverse, so I don't know where they're leading with this. But because they need help fixing powers, the Thing and the Human Torch go to Hercules in a bar. Of course, he's in a bar. Even though he stopped drinking, Tony Stark has created a phony Stark ale for him. and they go to ask him how he got his powers back after he lost it as being a god. He takes him to this sort of scientist who is this snarky female scientist they met in an earlier issue. There's a D-list villain who's used really well here. I don't want to completely give away, but Hercules does yell the line, "Fight me as a solid, you vainglorious puddle," which is pretty great. And Chip Zdarsky writing Hercules is everything you'd think it would be. Meanwhile, there's a sub runner about Doctor Doom interfering with the Mad Thinker, who is like basically stealing Reed Richards' old technology for reasons that are revealed at the tail end.
When he's done right, by the way, which is not too often. I actually really like the Mad Thinker.
Yeah, he's done right here.
Cool.
This is the four sort of fun lead into Fantastic Four book. I'm still not sure where they're going with it. It still seems weird to me they're just calling it Marvel 2-in-1.
Well,
but But I like it a lot.
There's also a big revelation of why Human Torch is losing his powers.
Right, right. There's, and then that sort of ties into what's going on and what the book's going to be about. But
well, traditionally, Marvel 2-in-1 was the Thing and somebody.
Yep.
Each different each issue.
Now it's always the Thing and Human Torch.
But is it going to, like, you know, after like 6 issues or something, though, is it going to be like the Thing and Scarlet Witch or
no,
something?
No, I believe this is leading to the Return of the Fantastic Four.
So it's just going to, is it a miniseries, though?
We don't really know.
Oh, it's one of those vague books.
Yeah, it's one of those vague
books. I'm trying to think, who did they team up with in the second one?
Because
this one they definitely team up with Hercules. Is it basically
Doom
the two?
Doom was in the second one.
Yeah.
And it was just the two of them probably for the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in their weird way, they are kind of operating, but that means that's really a 3-in-1,
yeah.
Guys. Make your
right,
decisions.
Exactly. All right, other stuff on my stack this week. Ninjak number 4 introduces the ninja G from the 70s, who is a sort of blaxploitation style character. This is her older self, and she sort of tells the tale of her of what it was like in the 70s and during the Cold War. It's really, really good. I've been really enjoying Ninjak. It easily could have been my pick this week. Punisher number 221 is more of Punisher's War Machine, which has been a lot of fun. New Superman number 20 introduces New Superman and the Justice League of China. They've already had Batman and Wonder Woman of China and Flash. Now they're introducing looks like Green Lantern and Aquaman maybe are going to make their way in. And of course there is a sort of a different spin on it. Jing Lin Wang is basically creating this different mythology of sort of Chinese superheroes that I'm really, really enjoying. Killer Be Killed, number 16. Dave didn't pick it this week, so it's clearly the worst issue of the run.
You know, I'm going to be honest, people. It was better than both of my other picks, but I'm not going to do that every week when there's more interesting things to talk about.
You will not be trapped by Killer Be Killed. Anyway, it's another great issue of Killer Be Killed. Old Man Hawkeye, number 2. Avengers, number 680, which is the continuation and part 6 of the No Surrender story. And I just want to mention a couple other things that are on the on the shelf this week. There's a Deadpool as Chef statue from Kotobuki.
You mean Kotobukiya?
Whatever.
Get it right.
And then there's a Mercy Nendoroid figure, which is in the line of the tracer that we got.
They're awesome.
Mercy from Overwatch. That's really cool. And we finally got the Rick and Morty blind mini boxes, which are cool. Dave, what else is on your list?
Let's see. Did you mention Xena?
I did not.
Xena has a comic.
Yep.
Am I correct that there was like a year ago there was like some other Xena series?
There were talks. There was
something.
It was more than a year ago there was Xena.
Yeah. I actually don't know the exact deal on this, but Meredith Finch, who had, I think, a slightly mixed review run on Wonder Woman, perhaps better suited to the kind of like the craziness that is Xena. But anyway, the possibility of a show revamp goes along, if you want some old school Xena, there it is. To mention this. All right, then we have Mark Miller has a new Kick-Ass book. This is the one with a different character as Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
He is a she. Who's the actress? Tessa
Thompson.
Is that who she said she wanted to play?
Yeah, that's who she said she wanted to play. And I was like, no, you don't want to play no Mark Miller character. Go do something else.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, you know, she is probably like, I'm sure for her role as Valkyrie, she's like all super ripped right now from all her training, and I can kind of see how you might want to do like some action hero stuff.
Yeah. But Mark Miller, John Romita Jr., and it's a solid origin.
Yes. Yep. Let's see, and I wanted to mention this was actually, I forgot about this because I left it out while we were reading for Tila to read, but this would have been one of my picks probably. Giant Spider and Me, a Post-Apocalyptic Tale. This was a manga that we got this week that is a kind of lighthearted look at a what is indeed seems to be a post-apocalyptic thing, but kind of a sweet post-apocalypse. I'm going to say Miyazaki-esque about a little girl who's clearly living on her own and gathers food and stuff to make. And it's not like making gruel and stuff. It does seem like there's like kind of normal stuff around, and she's a good chef, so she can make what she wants. But she's living alone, and she's missing her folks and stuff like that from whatever happened.
Mm-hmm.
She's out in the forest one day when a big old, I think, was it a wolf spider? Is that what they call those?
Yeah.
That it sort of looks like, scuttles out and sees her. And when I say, it's like the size of...
It's like the size of a car. like a
small car, yeah. But it's like adorable. Like, have you ever seen those little spiders with that make little water droplet hats? This looks like one of those. And it like hides shyly behind the tree while she looks at it, and ends up following her home because it's hungry. As it happens, she's a good chef. Mm-hmm. And they even make a point to, like, when she cooks something, they show you the recipe for it. So there's a bit of chefery to this book, too.
Okay.
But it is a very adorable, very nicely drawn story about a girl and her post-apocalyptic pet spider. I didn't read
that old story.
I didn't read the entire thing, but... The art is really gorgeous in this, and it sells their friendship in a really fun way. So just remember, people, consider Giant Spider and Me a post-apocalyptic tale.
Yep. Nick?
Just a few more to add. Despicable Deadpool 294, which is a final confrontation with his arch nemesis Madcap.
Okay.
Yeah. Detective Comics 974, which is kind of a turning point for one of the characters in the team. Also, the death of one. Lots of stuff is happening. The team may or may not be falling apart. X-Men Blue number 21, the first part of the Poison X storyline, featuring Venom and the X-Men Blue team on the trail for Cyclops' father, who has been kidnapped. And then Red Hood and the Outlaws number 19. I randomly picked this up. Really was struck by the art in here by Marcio Takara. But it features a date between Artemis and Jason Todd.
Okay.
And a weirdly now smart Bizarro.
Huh.
Like super smart.
Do they do the old... flowers for Ultron thing?
I mean, a little bit, but ultimately, it was a very interesting story. I might check back into this book just to see what's going on.
By smart, do you mean dumb because it's opposite?
No. He's actually...
just checking. I had to make sure.
I think they are riffing on the... he's accessing the Lex Luthor part of his brain because this is a...
A Bizarro of Superboy?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah,
it is. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
so. Was that revealed in issue one or something?
I don't know. It was like more after that.
Okay. Yeah. I was like, I didn't know that.
But yeah, it is basically accessing that portion of his brain. And of course, Lex is in, like, watching him and stuff like that because Lex is Lex and creepy. Knows all. Yes, he is the creepy stalker. but yeah, that is all that I have to add. All
right. I thought you were going to mention Doctor Strange.
Oh, and then there's Doctor Strange, which sort of sees the conclusion of the Loki story. I actually thought it was a pretty good ending to it, and Donny Cates utilizes the Sentry and the Void in a way that I didn't hate.
High praise indeed. When it comes to the Sentry.
Well, those characters are maybe not the greatest for Marvel characters.
all right, we'll be back in just a second to talk about some TV and Netflix movies and some games. All right, so we want to talk about some stuff on Netflix and then a bunch of games. I played a bunch of games, and Dave and I played a game that is a new game to us that we really liked. We're talking about all that stuff. First, I want to mention, because I keep forgetting, it's Black Panther week.
Right.
It's true.
So Black Panther is hitting. We're going to see it on opening day, Thursday.
I am clearly going to have to rein in my expectations because every article I've read has said this is, you know, like one of the most groundbreaking Marvel movies ever.
Yeah.
Audiences are, like, loving it, that it's not only a good movie but is, like, deeply meaningful for Black Americans.
Yeah, I think the thing is, I think that's what's happening is they're a little bit grading on a curve of, like, this is so important and they got it right. And that's really, they needed, as long as they got it right, it's going to be heralded as, like, the best movie. Remember that every Marvel movie that comes out is pretty much heralded as the best Marvel movies to date. That's what happened with Thor Ragnarok. That's what happened with Spider-Man Homecoming. Right.
But it's why I need to temper my expectations, because there's a lot of sources saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, and right now, I think it's the highest rated superhero movie ever on Rotten Tomatoes.
I mean, and I also saw a most tweeted about movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of hype around Black Panther. I think you're probably right to scale expectations a little bit, but I'm definitely expecting to enjoy the movie.
Right. I honestly expect it to be, at the least, really very good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not necessarily thinking it's going
to
blow past Civil
War for me. It's hard for me to say something is going to be great, although Marvel easily has that within their capacity. But it could be that, I'm going to hope that it's good, like at least maybe very good even.
I've loved pretty much everything Marvel's done, even the stuff that took a little while to grab me, like Spider-Man or Thor Ragnarok.
You had to go back and re-edit your love.
I got to go back and re-edit my love. But even like Iron Man 2, so many people love, I have a huge, or hate, I have a super huge fondness for it.
I know that you didn't.
I have a mark for the Marvel Cinematic
Universe. I know that you didn't love Ragnarok, Thor Ragnarok, but so let me ask you this just a real quick pointed question.
Yeah.
Iron Man 2 or Thor Ragnarok?
Thor Ragnarok.
Okay, I was just curious where it fell in your pantheon.
No, I like Iron Man 2, but Iron Man 2, I see all the flaws. Yeah. Thor Ragnarok, it just
has some issues, but you enjoyed a lot of the ride.
No, it wasn't even issues. It wasn't what I was looking for.
Right.
And that's kind of the issue I'm having lately with movies like
you were looking for a deep and nuanced conversational piece between Loki and Thor.
That's what I wanted. I wanted more of a My Dinner with Andre.
You've always disliked me, haven't you, Thor? Yes, brother.
That's what I wanted. My Dinner with Andre, but with gods. I did not get that. And actually, all I really want is Beta Ray Bill. If they could have given me Beta Ray Bill, I would have loved everything else with
him. Even if it was like a cardboard standee of him during the closing credits that just kind of glides past?
No, because we had that. We had the picture. That wasn't enough. I wanted the character.
Yeah, we got a giant statue of Beta Ray Bill. Yeah. What are we talking about?
Not enough.
Not enough.
I wanted his character.
I think we'll get him. Anyway. And now he's coming.
I did buy Thor Ragnarok. It's going to be showing up on our digital as soon as it shows up. So it's not like I didn't love it. I just didn't love it as much as everybody else. Yeah. It was like, it's the best Marvel movie ever.
It is the best Marvel movie ever.
So, okay. Until Black Panther.
Until Black Panther. So, yeah, it's going to be very exciting. We're doing as always, Thursday release night so that we can see it for you guys coming and spoil it for us, you jerks.
Yeah. Well, I got pointed really fast.
Actually, people are usually pretty good about
it.
They are,
actually.
But it'll be cool because then when people want to come in and say, wasn't that cool? I'll be able to say, yeah, or sadly, no. And then I will be throttled by the whole crowd.
Yes, yeah.
It happens sometimes, by the way.
It does.
I don't expect it to happen here.
No, me neither. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be great. So I just finished watching the Netflix show Altered Carbon, which is a cyberpunk novel by Richard K. Morgan, who is not like the... He's not the original cyberpunk writer. That was William Gibson. And I don't know that I've ever read any Richard K. Morgan books, even though I was a big cyberpunk fan. But I did read like a comic adaptation they did at Vertigo or Helix or one of those. Which I liked, and I never came around reading his books. But this one is a sort of far future cyberpunk. It's like 250 years past the sort of cyberpunk age.
Not the usual next 50 years kind of cyberpunk.
But it does have that feel that Blade Runner-esque, dirty future kind of thing. It is basically the sort of central technology is, they're called sleeves. Basically everyone's stack, which is their personality, is put on a chip, a computer chip, and then you can just transplant that into a new body whenever you want, if you're rich. If you're poor and you get killed in like a hit and run or something, they will put you in like the body of a felon who's been executed. Just whatever body's laying around. So it's definitely about sort of the class divide and that kind of thing. And the rich do live in like these floating cities up in the clouds. But the story centers around a...
That's kind of, in cyberpunk terms, that sounds a little crazy.
It's still very cyberpunk. And in fact, I've been waiting for a good cyberpunk TV show, and this is definitely it.
Nice.
It's very dark. There's a ton of weird sex stuff, which you wouldn't not surprise when you can swap bodies. They really go into that kind of stuff.
Yep.
It's very violent. It's very, very R-rated. But it centers around a character who is what they call an envoy. Someone who could jump into bodies wirelessly and sort of immediately jump in and become like a insurgent. And they were this force, this sort of terrorist force against the government that was trying to stop... death technology. They were starting to stop this technology. Uh-huh. They wanted people to die normally. They thought that if it continued, they were going to wind up with this sort of rich, immortal gods running the world. And that is, in fact, what happened.
Right.
This guy, 250 years later, comes back in the body of a prisoner.
Yeah, that is the legit question I've always had whenever there's like, well, what if we could cryogenically freeze until we can heal everything? And it's like, well, if nobody dies off anymore, what do the elite do? And yeah. I guess... what you would expect, they would lord their power over everybody.
This explores that. Basically, this guy is a special op kind of person. He's put into the body of he's an Asian guy named Takashi Kovacs. So his dad was like I think Swedish or Norwegian or something like that.
Okay,
and he is put into the body of Joel Kinnaman.
Okay,
the guy who played in Suicide Squad, Rick Flag.
Oh, yeah.
And
I forgot that was the same guy.
Killing. He is pretty jacked here. He's like a big old ripped guy.
Is he a better actor than he was in
Rick Flag, but yeah, Rick Flag was not exactly a personable character.
Yeah, Joel Kinnaman's actually great. He was great in The Killing. He just was terrible for Suicide Squad. That was not his fault. No. That was Suicide Squad's fault. But he's like this special operative. He's brought back to deal with a murder of this sort of rich guy who basically, this guy was, he's always backed up and he's back alive and he wants to know who murdered him. And so he hires this guy to investigate his own murder. And there's a bunch of conspiracy stuff. We go through backstory stuff. We go through the technology. There's a police detective who's looking into this. It sort of gets into all the, you know, corporate rich guys owning everything that you want from cyberpunk. There's cyber technology. There's Matt Frewer has a guest role. It's everything I wanted of a cyberpunk TV show. I really, really enjoyed this.
Frewer, who, of course, was Max Headroom in the... like the most proto-cyberpunk, if not full-on cyberpunk, TV show of its era.
This sounds pretty close to the first book.
Yeah.
And there are multiple books.
And I think that's the thing is they can do multiple seasons of this character. So, yeah. It's 10 episodes. I really, really enjoyed this.
Netflix?
Netflix,
okay,
yeah.
So I should definitely watch this then.
You should.
It's like their highest production value show, I believe.
Okay. It looks fantastic.
Yeah.
It's
by the way, when you say they live in the clouds, though, I can only picture the like floating castles with little rockets on the bottom from the Flash Gordon movie from 1980.
Funnily enough, there is a thing called Head in the Clouds, which is a big station full of prostitutes that has rockets that keeps it afloat.
That sounds similar but different from Flash Gordon.
Nick, you watched some stuff on Netflix as well.
Yeah. It's alive. Well, let's talk about the horror movie first, and that is a movie called The Ritual.
Is this original to Netflix, or was this a movie that just came on there?
From what I understand, it was original to Netflix.
Okay, but I could be more of that stuff.
But I could be completely off base there, but I saw an article about it.
It's
kind of
hard to tell
week.
Because things just show up. You right. know? Like, I guess when Gerald's Game came out...
that was exclusive. That was Netflix produced.
Right. That was Netflix produced, but it just suddenly just appeared. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, that was pretty good. And then the next day there was, like, that 1929 or whatever that other one is.
Yeah, the other Stephen King
and
one.
And I was just there, not the next day, but within a few weeks there was just another one. And
yeah. Well, Netflix at this point has so much content that they seem to drop it at the whim of whatever.
Yeah,
I mean...
You turn on Netflix, it's like, well, there's six new shows to watch.
You could be watching
movies.
The Super Bowl and you get an ad for a movie that's going to drop in 5 seconds.
Yeah.
That was actually,
we'll
I have to say,
that.
Some ingenious type of marketing because, like, I would say about half of my friends, even those who ultimately ended up hating it, were like, well, I guess I'm watching that next.
Yeah. But, yeah, the horror movie is called The Ritual.
Uh-huh.
It is a pretty simple story in the fact that a group of friends are out one night, one of them gets killed, and sort of they were all about to head out to basically... a hiking area between Sweden and Norway.
Okay.
And before that happens, one of them gets killed. So to sort of commemorate his death and sort of celebrate his life, they go there. And in doing that, one of them injures his foot, so they decide to take a shortcut through some woods.
Okay.
Which, in a horror film, that's never a good idea.
It's not the best idea in real life, either.
I mean, probably not, especially in this sort of removed location where you are pretty much alone.
Yeah.
But they go into the woods, they find this abandoned home because they're kind of lost and they need shelter.
Sure. Anybody would take it.
I mean, maybe. I probably would have gotten the hell out of there, honestly. Because there's some really weird kind of ritualistic stuff that they come across. But they sort of make that kind of decision to stay because they need... because it's raining, it's horrible out. The lead character is one of the guys from Downton Abbey.
Yes, remember, in the real world, there is no magic and evil monsters and stuff like that. So you could do that in the real world and you'd be safe.
We don't know that for sure,
Dave. I know
it
for sure. I checked.
Until you are out in the woods one day and this happens.
That is how it happens, yeah.
Well, yes, they do run across some witchcraft monsters, things like that. I think the easiest comparison is to the Blair Witch Project.
Okay.
Although not done sort of the handheld. It is
right.
Traditional movie.
And Blair Witch, of course, famously was like one of the ultimate you don't see the monster movies.
This one you do. And right. I have to say the creature effects are fantastic.
Okay.
Some of the best I've seen recently. Just design-wise. The interesting thing
for me, though, is that, like, I'm going to say, like, Guillermo del Toro's Crimson Peak had some good creature designs, but they weren't scary other than the jump part of it for me. Because he was kind of showy with them, honestly. So is this a showy one, or is this one of those ones where there's lots of motion blur and, like, you see something is out there, but you don't see it?
It's a blend, actually.
Okay.
It basically works itself up. You don't get to see a lot of it except for in, like, split-second instances. But there is a payoff.
Okay. I'll probably check it out. That sounds up my alley.
I will say
I need to check that other one you saw too, which was
the monster.
Okay, yeah.
The creature design feels like it was plucked out of Guy Davis's brain.
Okay, Guy Davis, one of the great monster designers for BPRD.
Yeah. And then the other thing I watched on Netflix, which I think Dave tried to watch and couldn't.
Yeah.
Was the movie The Cloverfield Paradox,
third in the Cloverfield series of vaguely related movies, but a movie that ties it all together.
Well, it's usually movies that were going to be made and then Abrams got a hold of and sort of molded.
They're like, well, what if you Cloverfielded it up?
Yeah, basically, because I believe this movie was originally called The God Particle.
Yeah, I heard that. And anybody who has seen 10 Cloverfield Lane, for instance, knows that although there are some, I'm going to say, slightly above normal elements, something kind of like, if not supernatural, there's something very weird about it. But 95% of it is a capture-escape situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you say, a claustrophobic, survivalist shelter-escape scenario. Yeah.
Very well done.
Right, I love 10 Cloverfield Lane, and so, but that also was not originally a Cloverfield movie. Excuse me.
The only real Cloverfield movie was the first one.
Was Cloverfield.
I know. So, that movie gave Randy so much motion sickness he had to leave the movie theater.
Yep, I couldn't finish watching it.
I actually find it a flawed film, but a very fun flawed film.
I remember it being pretty solid. I've only seen it the once, but I'll probably catch it again at some point.
Yeah.
Before you go on, I was going to say, my dismissal of it was kind of a little bit cheeky. I just thought that the sort of central premise that they kind of set up through some little excerpts from, like, transmissions and radio stuff and stuff in the beginning was just almost a little too far-fetched for the otherwise kind of realistic worlds that we had seen in the other movies. This one is, like, in the future a little bit.
Well, the others are sort of kind of, this movie ties all of them together,
right?
Pretty much, and it does seem.
If for that alone, I'll probably see it because I kind of in my head saw ways to connect them, but it's not real obvious.
Yeah.
Now, for instance, in 10 Cloverfield Lane, no spoilers really here, but there is no giant kaiju monster from Cloverfield.
Correct. And then the first one, there is a giant kaiju monster, but it really is focusing on a group of friends trying to survive this outbreak.
You can only intuit certain things about, like, why is it there? Was it from space? You can get some bits and pieces, but you don't know a lot of details.
Yeah, and the third film sort of purposes that the world is in turmoil. Doesn't give us a date. It doesn't say the far-flung future.
I think it was only because they mentioned some kind of super collider that was being built in space that I assumed, like 10 or 20 years, maybe.
It's possible, but it does prove that all of the timeline sort of meshes. Okay. So it is
and
sort
since
of
those were roughly the present, this could be roughly the present.
Yeah, roughly the present, give or take a little bit.
Yeah.
But, it basically takes place on an ISS, like a space station.
Yep.
All of the different countries around the world have sort of gathered their best and sent them up there. And it is kind of a who's who of actors, of character actors, which I really enjoyed. It's got, like, Daniel Brühl, who played Zemo in Civil War. I'm blanking on a lot of people's names. I know Donald Logue makes a cameo appearance that is pretty great. But it is sort of kind of goes the route of they fire up this collider and bad things start happening.
Okay.
Because, you know, that was the whole thing about the super collider on Earth, like, what, we're going to destroy the world because if we turn it on, that was kind of the theory that some people proposing.
There's any number of things that could go wrong. Like, life, the whole universe might blink out of existence, or we might cause a giant explosion, or whatever.
And this sort of takes some sci-fi tropes and runs with it, and gets to have fun. The characters get to fight amongst themselves. You get sort of the inner conflict of people not trusting each other. Because
a little bit of that close quarters paranoia.
And also on the ground, you know, there's certain, like, Russia is not really trusted amongst other people, but the Japanese are trusting the Russians, so there's sort of that inner conflict as well. Okay. So I think it does some things really, really well. Not everything is great about the movie. It definitely has some misses.
Watching the reactions from my Facebook friends, I saw the full spectrum, I think. I saw people who loved it, people who despised it, people who thought it was okay, people who thought it was quite good but flawed, and, you know, like every single spectrum was represented there. There was definitely not a consensus. Other than the... I mean... Yeah, there was no... I can't say a consensus.
Yeah, and like I said, I was looking up who all was in this. It's Elizabeth Debicki, who not everyone will know, but if you saw Guardians of the Galaxy 2, she was the leader, or she was the person who's going to create Adam Warlock.
Right. Gold-skinned people.
Yeah, Daniel Brühl from Zemo. Chris O'Dowd, who's been in a lot of just... as random funny guy. He's also on the Get Shorty Epics television show. But he was in Bridesmaids and... he's great in this. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's the best.
What was it you like best about it? Is, like, character, plot, suspense?
Character interaction.
Okay.
That's sort of where kind of I liked the most. The story itself is interesting, sort of.
Do you feel it credibly or interestingly ties them all together?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you do get a reason why there's giant monsters running around in Earth and... are on Earth, so
do you feel that will there be? Does this feel like a capper to the series?
No, there's already another one planned. So
okay,
we're gonna see more of this, and Netflix will probably drop it at some random time.
I want to talk about some board games. I had one of my regular board game nights and played a bunch of new games. Before we do that, though, Dave, you and I had a board game night.
Oh, right.
During which we played Hero Realms, one of our favorites, and we played...
We played a version that was very cool.
The Dragon Boss Deck.
Yeah, so it was like all... one player plays the boss dragon, and everybody else fights him.
Yep, I played the dragon.
And it was a good fight. You got lost, you got beat.
I did. In fact, I only killed one of you.
You only killed one of us. But it was fascinating because the tactics were interesting. One of the neat things is, of course, you have, like, 3 times the hit points of anybody.
Yeah.
And you have some pretty badass attacks right out of the gate. But you also had your Dragon Treasure Horde.
Yeah.
Dragon Treasure Horde would periodically turn up, not all the time, but they would, like, every once in a while.
Well, there was a card in my hand, my dragon starting hand, that was the Treasure Horde card. When it came out, we flipped over a card from the Treasure Horde, and it was something like... the first one was...
some kind of magical ruby or something.
Let me kill one of your champions every round.
Right.
And then the next one was let me heal 5 every round. And basically, you guys had to discard some cards to steal that from my horde, and then you got that ability.
Right. And clearly it was one of those things where we realized early on, stealing these quickly would probably be important, but that meant the very attacks that we had, like cards that we had just spent a lot of... other cards to get, and there were our new cool cards and our attack cards, would have to be discarded periodically in order to get the treasure, A, to keep it out of Randy's hands, and B, because, like, at that point, I was starting to already get hurt pretty badly. My guy who was the...
you're the fighter, weren't you?
I was the fighter, and you were kind of going after me early on, and my hit points were low, and I was like, oh, I need that healing item, and so I got it. And then at that, you know, like a turn or two later, I was like, oh, right, he can get it back, though, which you did.
Well, and I changed tactics from going, I went after the cleric instead of the fighter, which was my mistake. I should have stuck with killed the fighter and then moved on.
Yeah, probably should have pressed me.
But there's also a mechanic where whoever does 10 more points damage the dragon... Taunts him, so you have to attack that player.
Right, and if multiple people do that, then he chooses, or...
Yeah, he can choose between those players.
Yeah.
But you can sort of keep him away from the less vulnerable players, with the more vulnerable players, if you... do enough damage. Yep. It's a really interesting mechanic, and there's a Lich deck as well, which is something similar.
That was so cool. I would actually would like to like try playing as the dragon at some point, and or the Lich, and see how that goes. Very cool way to new method of playing this game, which is based on the awesome basics of Star Realms.
Yeah. And then we also played the first our first unlock game, which is a series of small card games. They're $15. They are one time through play, so they sort of simulate a puzzle room.
Oh yeah, one of those escape room things. I picked up one on a whim a few weeks ago, and we finally got a chance to play it. I knew it would be fast because it's got an hour time limit, just like most escape rooms do. It's also, like Randy said, it's a one-time playthrough, which is a weird thing to wrap your head around, but we had a ton of fun with it.
Oh, totally worth it.
And and it's also a one that I will now just pass on to friends to try out.
Right.
And I thought that I can sort of, like, in a way, GM when they play and answer a few of the rules-related questions that we had so that just to kind of help them moving forward, not no puzzle questions. The game itself comes with a neat, like, 10-card deck that teaches you the basic mechanics because they basically do all the escape room stuff in a single deck, which seems insane. Like, how do you do that? But the basic way it works is this, and that 10-card starter is a clever one.
Yeah.
Basically, I believe they have this somewhat silly fictional notion that there is, like, an unlock secret society or whatever.
Yeah.
I guess of like, problem and solvers and mystery delver types. And you're at, like, the unlock headquarters, and you get locked in a room, and you have to find your way out.
Yep.
And you learn how to deal with these cards. And what you do is, all these cards have a number on the back, roughly from 1 to 100. And when the game begins, it'll say, flip over these few cards. And so you'll flip over a card, which in our case, we were playing the, once we got actually playing the main game, was like a haunted house. Yep. We knew that we were supposed to go in and find out what was causing these weird, like, hauntings everywhere, that there was probably a book involved that had released it, and right. We needed to figure out what was going on. So you do this thing, you flip over a card, and they have beautiful art on these, of like the opening, the foyer inside there, and then there was also a card that showed like key items in there, like here's a cabinet that's locked in there,
locked cabinet.
Here's a flashlight with no batteries, and a few other items. And one of the very first things you can do is, like, the cards have little symbols on the top, is red and blue cards can be combined, potentially.
Yeah, and if they combine the number, they each have a number on them, if you combine the numbers, it'll give you a card, and you can pull that card.
Yeah, so you just go to that card.
What we discovered is that you don't always want to do it.
Right, because there was, like a magnifying glass.
Yeah, we're like, oh, we can use this to light this candle or whatever, and we tried, and, like...
They had a card for it.
Yeah, they had a card. You pull it, and it's like, this was the wrong. You lose 3 minutes.
Yeah, and then... that's the thing we didn't mention, is there's an app related to this.
Yeah.
So you download the app, which works as a timer, a hint giver if you want it.
And Moody Music.
And Moody Music, yes, that was cool, kind of like eerie music. You can also pause it should you want, probably like if somebody's like, I just have to go to the bathroom. But we did not pause it. We held it. We did have some rules confusion, which we probably in retrospect should have paused it for.
Yeah.
Because the surprise reveal is we did not win this. We kind of got skunked in a way.
Yeah.
But we also did well in a way, too.
We had a ton of fun. And I think, Jericho we played with bought one, and I bought three.
Right. Clearly, so. it left a mark on us.
So we're excited. And there's a new batch coming out in a few months.
But I will say, like, the way it worked is kind of that when you guys start... When you figure things out, which you'll start figuring things out very quickly, aside from those failures, there was a lot of neat things where, like, figured out... When you figure out things that clearly are supposed to go together, then suddenly it's like, oh, now we can get in the cabinet. Oh, that's got a key that now opens this door. Oh, and now you'll draw a card that's like a new location, and it'll tell you what cards to get rid of, so you never have too many cards faced up. Maybe never more than, like, 5 or 8 cards, maybe. And then there's like some serious puzzles in there, which are like, well, we have to figure out what this. There's like a piece of art that's gonna give us a clue, which will when worked in conjunction with this other card, will give us a number.
Yeah.
And we need that number to open a electronic lock on the door.
Right.
So that's another thing you do with the app is you enter various codes and stuff you find, and like some of those puzzles and things to figure out. They were tricky. This game says ages 10 and up, and we were like, I don't know about that.
But if you ever enjoyed escape rooms, this was a great way to do it.
Yeah, when we say tricky, they were tricky in such a way that when you got it, it was very satisfying. And we came close to winning.
Yes.
We came close to winning, and it was really cool.
All right, I played 4 games, 3 of which were from our demo library, so I'm going to talk about the one that was not first. Played the game called Who Should We Eat?
Yes.
This is a WizKids game. It is a game about, basically it starts out cooperative. You're people who have crashed on a desert island, and you have three boards, and the boards are sanity, the raft building, and your food supply. And you'll have, each card you have is like has a character card, and your character card, so there are three decks of cards. There's a deck of cards for each, so a sanity deck, there's a food deck, and a build deck. And your card tells you how many cards of each type you pull, and how much meat is on you if you decide to eat that character. And then there's a personality card that you play on top of it. So I was the coach. I had like four edibility, and I got two sanity cards and two build cards every turn. And I also got dieter, which meant that when it came to the food, I drew straws, and there's a 50-50 chance. If I drew the short straw, I ate twice as much food. If I drew the long straw, I ate zero food.
It's hilarious.
So each round, basically, you go through, everybody contributes a card, and then you hide a card away, and then everybody reveals their cards. There's little challenges, like someone found a piece of driftwood that looked like Cthulhu, and it gave them a bonus. And so each turn, like the leader moves, or the leader changes, they get a challenge, it goes to somebody, you lose a little bit of sanity because you're stuck on this island, and you have to eat your food supply. If your food supply drops below zero, you have to have a trial and decide who to eat. And when there's a trial, if you have one of the knife cards hidden...
Why are all games designed to make friends on friends?
You can stab somebody. And I know this because when I was the dieter, I understood immediately they were going to eat me first. So I kept hiding a knife away. And when our ex-staffer Roxy became the leader and had to call the trial, as everyone else was making their arguments, I revealed my knife and stabbed Roxy because she was looking most delicious. So we ate her instead. And the great thing is, after she was killed, she became a ghost and started haunting us and trying to drive the rest of us insane.
So you do not, like in other kind of party-type games, like Werewolf and stuff like that, you're not out when you're out.
No. And and then, of course, they ate me next, and I became a ghost and joined Roxy, all was forgiven, we became Team Ghost to try and turn them all insane, which, once we had a third ghost, we succeeded.
If only I had had options like that when y'all tried to kill me in Outpost 31.
Yes, I know. So, ultimately, in this game, the Team Ghost won. We drove the rest of the island inhabitants insane, which I guess happens a lot. This was a super fun game. It starts off cooperative, and by the end is very much not. It was a blast. I'm not always a screw-your-neighbor type guy person, but this was a real
fun. It sounds like it's got the right side of sort of style and sense of humor to pull it off.
The other three are all in our game library, which means you could come on a game night and play it, or if you have a rogue card, you could borrow any of these games.
Am I correct that somebody who does not have a rogue card could come on a... Well, you say game night, but they could come really anytime they can schedule.
Anytime we have space at the table, which is basically, you know, it's not like D&D or HeroClix or Magic Night.
Yep.
So, the first one I want to mention is called Dice Throne, which is a game that you can play 1v1, 2v2, 3v3, or free-for-all. So it goes up to 6 players. There are 6 characters in there that are like... There's a barbarian, a pyromancer, a paladin, a moon elf, and a couple others. And each character has a set of 5 dice with different faces, a board that gives them combinations they can roll with those dice, a deck of cards that gives them abilities, and then a life counter. And it sounds really complicated. It's not like this looks like a lot of stuff, but basically it's very simple. It's a little King of Tokyo rules. You get 3 rolls. You try to get certain combos. And then you attack, and you roll to see who you attack. So you choose. And you're trying to basically be the last one standing.
Mm-hmm.
But there are abilities like the Paladin has a lot of healing stuff. The Pyromancer is a character that blows everything up, like a lot of collateral damage. The Shadow Thief is the one who's most powerful. They got a lot of abilities to upgrade and had stealth abilities to dodge damage and that kind of stuff. It was a really fun game. We all really liked that one. And then there's a game called Topiary.
Oh, just real quick.
Yep.
That game is also one I've heard very good buzz on.
Yeah, it was a Kickstarter hit.
Coming in asking about it.
And I believe we have 1 copy left.
Yeah.
There's a game called Topiary, which is basically you're building topiary gardens, sort of shapes.
Yep.
And this is a tile building game where you set up a little meeple. They have a line of sight across 5 tiles. You can do horizontal, vertical, or diagonal.
Uh-huh.
And you try to set up the view so it goes like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because you can see anything that's taller than the one in front of you, you can see.
Yep.
But just by the nature of, like, as you reveal the tiles, there are going to be somewhere like there's a 5. So you get 5 points for that one, but you can't see anything beyond it. And there's a little bit of sort of, you know, messing with other people's sight lines and that kind of thing. It's a really fun game.
That sounds like cool, like kind of somewhat unique mechanics.
Yeah, it was a quick play game. It reminded me what I like about something like Carcassonne. And it was... The other thing we really liked is that the meeples all look different. They've all got different hairstyles. There's even one that's in a wheelchair.
Oh, nice.
So that was kind of fun. And then finally there was When I Dream, which reminds me a little bit of the sort of the Dixit type games. This is a game where basically there's everybody's has a role. There's we had six players, and there's you can go up to like 8 or 10. But the players were there was one boogeyman who benefits from the bad dreams, two fairies who benefit from good dreams, and then the sandmen who want a balance of good and bad.
Oh, okay.
And the way it works is you rotate, and one person becomes the dreamer, and then everybody else is giving clues. And the dreamer puts on this sleep mask, and there are cards that have one word on them and an image, and there's a lot of great imagery. And you start a 2-minute sand timer, and then you each take turns giving one word clues to try to indicate what's on the card. And the other thing that's different from, say, Dixit is because you're feeding off everybody else's clues, when we had, say, we had slippers.
Yeah.
And people were like, and you can't go like, you can't say like shoes. It can't be exactly. Someone, I remember what people were saying. I remember because I was one of the Sandmen, I wanted them to screw up. I said bananas. But basically you're saying these clues and the dreamer is trying to guess the words quickly. So they get the correct words. And the boogeyman is trying to throw them off so they guess incorrectly. And the Sandmen want to have them to guess some incorrect and some correct. So they sort of change. So they don't know who you can trust. But once you get all these words in 2 minutes, it's usually like 5 to 10 words, the dreamer has to tell the story of their dream using the words they remember.
Uh-huh.
And the ones they don't remember go to the blue side. They go to the failure side of the board. So you have to remember the ones that you got.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different elements to it. But it was really fun. It was really clever.
Yeah, story thing reminds me of like Once Upon a Time. It's more, you know, a small element of that.
You go around the board once, and then you count up points. It was really fun. It's a good party game. I think you get a lot of people into it, and there's a lot of different cards and the mechanics of it. It's really beautiful art. The actual display stand is like a little bed. It's a very well done game, and it's by the same people who did maybe not Time Stories. Something else like that. Maybe it was. I remember it was Takedo. I don't know. There are people who've done another really good game, and this was a good game. So
nice.
Yeah, a bunch of good games I'd recommend. That's it for us this week. Yes. We'll be back next week more with our 199th episode.
Yep.
And until that time,
Yo Joe.
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.